In 1842, Great Britain's Queen Victoria made a visit to the zoo in London and looked at some apes. One of them, an orangutan named Jenny, she looked at, and after considerable time, she declared that the animal looked frightfully and painfully and disagreeably human. Was she right? How close was Queen Victoria to naming and to claiming the distinction and the similarities between the apes and the humans? You're listening to Longitude. It's Wednesday, October 20th, 2006. I'm Darris McNeely. A recent issue of Time Magazine, the October 9th, 2006 issue of Time Magazine, had a cover article entitled How We Became Human. Chimps and humans share almost 99% of their DNA. New discoveries reveal how we can be so alike and yet so different. It's an interesting article to look at in this ongoing debate. The issues between those who believe in creationism, the idea that man is created, was created by a god as described in the book of Genesis, and those of the scientific world and rational world who believe that in evolution as a means of explaining the origins of life on our planet. In this article, What Makes Us Different, it brings out the fact that the DNA, the genetic material, the basic building blocks of life between the apes and the humans are remarkably similar. And in fact, a comment by Queen Victoria that the apes of her day and what she saw there in the London Zoo on that day in 1842, they did look very much human in her mind, obviously is a statement that we can all relate to, because we've all marveled at, as we've made our trips to the zoo or on television or in movies, we've watched especially chimpanzees go through their antics that are comical and so laughable and in so many ways so very, very human. In fact, it's an interesting object lesson in nature to watch chimps, especially in the apes, cavort and to go about their life and to recognize how much similarity they are and what exactly we might learn from them in terms of human behavior. There's no question that their fascination has been from that very fact, that they do look very much human. Well, this article brings out the fact that though there's a world and a gulf of difference, when it comes to the DNA, a human is actually closer to a chimp, to the apes, than to any other part of the animal realm and the animal kingdom. Now, we know that they can't form words. They cannot create symphonies. No one has been able to train a chimp to sit down and type out a letter, an email, create a book or anything like that. That just hasn't happened. Frankly, I don't think it's going to happen. However, in this article, it brings out this very interesting point about these, how close things are and how tiny the differences are. Let me read one paragraph from page 46 of that issue of Time magazine. It says, "Yet tiny differences sprinkled throughout the genome have made all the difference. Agriculture, language, art, music, technology, and philosophy, all the achievements that make us profoundly different from chimpanzees and make a chimp in a business suit seem so deeply ridiculous, are somehow encoded within minute fractions of our genetic code. Nobody yet knows precisely where they are or how they work, but somewhere in the nuclei of our cells are handfuls of amino acids arranged in a specific order that endow us with the brain power to outthink and to outdo our closest relatives on the tree of life. They give us the ability to speak and to write and to read, to compose symphonies, to paint masterpieces, and delve into the molecular biology that makes us what we are." End of quote. That is really an interesting quote from this article that I do want to focus on and to think about, because this article goes on to show, again, how very close the human genome is between the chimps and the human realm, and yet it doesn't really come up with any concrete answers to explain why there is this vast gulf of difference between chimp behavior and human behavior. Obviously, very, very close on the physical genetic scale, but universes apart when it comes to the actual accomplishments and the level of life that we have on the human realm as opposed to the chimp and any other aspect of the animal creation. Nothing really begins to explain what makes humans different when you look at it only from the physical aspect here. And yet, as this article goes on to show, this research is delving into this study for a number of reasons, one of which is to hopefully understand human diseases better and how to treat them, a noble endeavor, and certainly whatever scientists do learn about the human body and human life that helps to prolong life or make life better, so much to the good in that sense. But I suspect, as I think probably many of you do, that there's another issue, and there are many other agendas that are driving this study. Obviously, there is a difference in fundamental beliefs between those who believe in creation, the idea of a God, a creator, who set in order and created human life and all the life on this planet and all of the systems, as opposed to the evolutionary ideas that are held as dogma and doctrine by the majority of the world, certainly the scientific community, and rational thinking human beings. There's a vast difference between the two, and yet this article goes on to really give no concrete answer to understand why there is this vast gulf and this vast difference. Maybe one of the agendas is illustrated by something that I recently read in another source, a book entitled America Alone, just recently published by Mark Stein, a syndicated columnist, and he was talking about the demographic issues that are a big problem in Europe especially as opposed to other parts of the world. And he makes an interesting comment about the fact that in Spain, which has a very, very low reproductive rate, they're not reproducing themselves in Spain, it's about 1.1 humans in terms of its reproductive capacity over there. But in light of what has been taking place in that area, he does make a comment about the fact that in Spain this year, the ruling Socialist Party introduced a bill in Parliament legislating that apes be included in the, quote, category of persons, and that they be given the moral and legal protection that currently are only enjoyed by human beings, end of quote. Interesting, quite interesting. The Socialist Party's argument was that human Spaniards do, after all, share 98.4% of their genes with chimps, 97.7% of their genes are shared with gorillas, and 96.4% are shared with orangutans. Therefore, the Socialist Party in Spain believes in this bill that apes should be included in the category of persons and given all the legal, moral protection that are enjoyed by other people. Interesting statement there and situation in Spain. Perhaps that is one of the driving agendas that is a spinoff, or maybe it's one of the major things behind this idea to bring together and to show that really human beings genetically are not all that much different from the animal world. Well, what does really explain the difference between humans and the apes and chimpanzees? Is there something else that scientists have overlooked? I believe there is. In 1 Corinthians chapter 2, the Apostle Paul makes an interesting series of statements in regard to human life and the vast difference between spiritual comprehension and understanding of the spiritual dimension of life on God's level and human level. And in doing so, Paul makes a statement. Actually, it's a revelation when you really put it all together and piece all the parts of the picture together. It's a revelation of why humankind is so vastly superior and far more accomplished than any aspect of the animal realm, the animal world. In 1 Corinthians chapter 2, Paul begins to explain something. Let me begin reading in chapter 1. He says, "I, brethren, when I came to you, did not come with excellence of speech or of wisdom declaring to you the testimony of God." Paul was beginning to make a point here that the wisdom and the excellence of understanding he had came from God and not from human wisdom. "For I determined not to know anything among you except Jesus Christ and him crucified. I was with you in weakness and fear and much trembling. And my speech and my preaching were not with persuasive words of human wisdom, but in demonstration of the Spirit and of power, that your faith should not be in the wisdom of men, but in the power of God." Throughout Paul's writings, he shows the superiority of the wisdom of God as opposed to the wisdom of man. He understood that at his level of knowledge, the knowledge level of the first century, and he's making that point when it comes to the difference between spiritual understanding as opposed to what merely is on the human realm. Now, going on in verse 6, he says, "However, We speak wisdom among those who are mature, yet not the wisdom of this age, nor of the rulers of this age who are coming to nothing. But we speak the wisdom of God in a mystery, the hidden wisdom which God ordained before the ages for our glory. So Paul very obviously comes down on the side that the God of creation is the God revealed in the Bible, and that that God, that creator, is responsible for all human life that is placed here on this planet. And within that, perhaps Paul is telling us something as an anchor of our approach to what we see and what science is able to discover and discern with all of the technological marvels and understanding as available to us in the 21st century, as opposed to the reality of life on the level that God lives it. And that is that God is the creator of all life, human and animal life. And that even within those creations, I wonder if God has not placed certain things, like we see here in this very, very close relationship genetically between the apes and humans, if God did not purposely design that in order to continue the confusion for a time and for his purpose within man's thought, that would further hide the truth until God, in his mercy and in his wisdom according to his plan, ultimately reveals that full understanding to the world. And so we see these things, and we see the similarities, and perhaps instead of drawing us closer to God, for some it creates more of a wall of separation between a humble acceptance and understanding of what God has done and what God will do. Well, let's go back to what Paul wrote here. Because in verse 9 he says, it is written, "Eye has not seen, nor ear heard, nor have entered into the heart of man the things which God has prepared for those who love him. But God has revealed them to us through his Spirit." So he's saying that God has revealed to those that, according to his plan and his purpose, those within his church, he's revealed certain things, certain deep mysteries about life, spiritual truths, and he's revealed that by his Spirit. He says, he goes on in verse 10, "For the Spirit searches all things, yes, the deep things of God." So God's Spirit is the vehicle by which God chooses to reveal spiritual truths and understanding. Now, in verse 11 is a key point. "For what man knows the things of a man except the spirit of the man which is in him?" The spirit of the man which is in him. Here, Paul lifts the lid. Really, it's God through Paul, and as God inspired Paul to write what he did, he lifts the lid just a little bit and allows us to peek into one of these deep mysteries of life. And really, it's what is not understood by the scientists that are able to dissect life and map out the genetic code of life and still come up with a question in their mind, why this vast difference between apes and humans, even though it is so very, very close to having the same genetic record and the same set of genetic code. Why this vast difference? Well, the vast difference is because, as Paul here shows, there is a spirit in man. And that is by that spirit, a component, a non-physical component, as it has been described, that is within man, that allows him to understand, as he says here, the things of man, the things of this world, the things of life, the universe around us, to understand our own molecular structure and to delve deeply into those facts and mysteries, and to even ask the question of who we are and why we are, and to think about the deep meanings of existence. All of that is possible among human beings because God has endowed mankind, human beings of his own, the creation of his own hand, created in his own image, with this spirit in man that is described here in verse 11. That is the big difference. That is the explanation of the big difference between human life and all animal life, and that's revealed right here in the Bible. In verse 11, he goes on, he shows that by saying, "Even so, no one knows the things of God except the Spirit of God. Now, we have received not the spirit of the world, but the Spirit who is from God, that we might know the things that have been freely given to us by God." Paul's making a larger spiritual point here to show that man understands, people can understand spiritual matters only by virtue of receiving and having that revelation by the Spirit of God. But in so doing, he points out one of the great mysteries of life, that helps us to understand and to fill in the gap of really what makes us different. This is a large subject, obviously, and there's so much debated and discussed back and forth on this. We have a booklet that is available that if you have not yet read, I certainly encourage you to download a copy of it off of our website at ucg.org under our booklet section. The booklet is entitled Creation or Evolution? Does it really matter what you believe? And it will take you through a very, very careful study of the entire subject of creationism and evolution, and certainly it's going to come down on the side of what the Bible shows, that God himself, the God revealed in the scriptures, is the creator of life. It's a fascinating booklet. I encourage you to read it if you haven't done so. It will help you to understand exactly what makes us different, and it will provide that missing dimension that Time magazine and its cover article here doesn't provide, but it will give you what you need to understand about your life and why you are different, and it's going to help lead you even to a larger question of what your purpose is in life and why God has created you. If you haven't read it, I encourage you to do so. That's Longitude for this edition for Wednesday, October 20th. I'm Darris McNeely. Keep listening.